Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 610 presents former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley. It's Clint Sterner and the Show.
Actually, it's not Clint Sterner and the Show. You get an Independence Day version of Clint Sterner and the Show, but with B. Scott and Cecil Shores. Brandon Scott of SportsRadio610.com here with you with former NFL veteran wide receiver Cecil Shores III in the building with me. And we're going to try and test the audience, Cecil, at some point.
Let's do it.
To see if they can tell the difference between you and I. Maybe it takes, you know, I figure that it's more so in spurts where you and I sound alike and our voice twins. But I feel like throughout the course of a discussion, you or I or both of us will become passionate about something.
Right.
And at some point, the distinctions between how we sound will be more pronounced at some point for the audience. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. To me.
Do you think we sound alike, first of all?
That's a good question. I do think there is some, maybe the tone.
Maybe a little
right?
bit.
Right? Okay. A little bit. But I know my voice and I know your voice well. Yeah. So it's like I can tell the difference, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you also don't really hear your own voice the way it actually projects.
Very true.
And I got this thing about not really, and it's not good for radio, honestly, if you want to kind of make a career in radio like I'm trying to do. But I got this thing where I don't really like going back and listening to my voice.
Really?
So I'd know more probably what your real actual voice sounds like and then what my voice sounds like in my head.
Really?
Which they and they don't sound alike.
So you don't like hearing yourself?
I do not. Just kind of got like a little squeamish thing about it. I mean, I have to, and I do, but I don't
right,
like
it. You just don't like it.
No, it's kind of weird and awkward.
Why? How?
Well, because you're just kind of picking apart how you talk and when you stutter and all of that. Yeah. You know, when you're trying to do it professionally, especially, right?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, man, do I sound like an idiot in that situation? Or could I have been cleaner there or cleaner with my thought there? So that's kind of where it is.
From me to you, you sound great.
Okay, I appreciate
that.
You
sound good.
I appreciate that.
You sound really good. And when people say voice twins, it makes me perk up a little bit. Like, okay, I sound decent on air then if I sound like my man B. Scott. So we good to go, man.
You know what's so since we're on this topic, you know what's funny about this? I joke around. This is a little separate, self-deprecating on my part. But I joke around that when they do that, I'm like, nah, Cecil is the talented one.
Don't do that.
Cecil is don't the athletic one who spent time in the NFL.
Don't do that.
So like, I'm like, yeah, I'm Cecil Shorts minus all of the athletic success. Like, what if Cecil Shorts was not good at football?
Don't do that.
Would he be B. Scott? But I do joke around. I'm like, well, but there are some similarities. Like, one thing is, like, we're around the same age. I think we're about a year and a half apart. We're both doing our part to help repopulate the earth, and I think that we've done a good job. You've done a lot of the heavy lifting on that.
Hey,
but between the two of us, we have added 10 folks
there it
to
is.
This great country. You know, independent. You know, shout out to everybody
that's
on the 4th of July.
Between two of us, man. Give me that.
Yeah,
a lot,
straight
bro.
Up, straight
that's
up.
A lot, man.
Now, shout out to you for doing a lot of the heavy lifting with the 7. But between the two of us, we actually put 10 on this earth. So,
that's
but yeah, I make that joke. I say, well, you know what? It's cool. You know, if there's one thing let me have is the voice. So if the voice is the thing that I got going for me, Cecil got the NFL, beautiful family. I know I got that too, but you got beautiful family, NFL, you know, doing your thing with the Texans, you know, in game days. Just heard, actually, I knew you were doing the offensive coordinator stuff at Second Baptist. I want to get into that at some point as well, like as much as you can tell us about it. And I know you did so in the toss earlier, but you got Tony Levine as the head. So Second Baptist, let me get this straight, if I heard you correctly, in the toss with Adam Spillane and Sean Bajani. Shout out to both of those guys. Second Baptist has Tony Levine as his head coach and Cecil Shorts III, NFL veteran Cecil Shorts III, as his offensive coordinator. That's what Second Baptist is working with.
That's facts. So that's like a recruiting tool, right? Like, seriously. Tony Levine, been around the NFL a long time, special teams guru, was a head coach of U of H and college coach for a number of years, knows the game like the back of his hand, but more importantly, a really, 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 really good dude. Like,
yeah.
Solid, solid dude, man.
Yeah, I feel like that's just instant credibility, though, stepping on that campus. Sure. Or even when y'all go and whoever y'all play. Like, I imagine y'all's peers will have respectable coaches as well, and y'all respect the opponents and everything that. Not to slight anybody else's coaching staff or anything, but, like, I'm not hearing Tony Levine and Cecil Shorts III. You know what I mean? Like, the names ring out, so to speak.
The names sound good. I think Tony's name is, you know, coaching world. He's the guy that sticks out the most. He's been a head coach at college and all around the NFL. Our defensive coordinator, Keith Page, is really, really good, too.
Yeah.
So he's been around the high school world, and he's been around a lot of private schools in Houston, and he does an outstanding job with the kids and runs one of the top defenses the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years he's been a part of Second Baptist. So I'm the one that has to hold my end up to the bargain, if that makes sense.
This
is like, you know, my first year being the OC, so I really got to keep up with Keith and Tony.
First year as the OC, this is your first time calling plays?
First time calling plays. Well. I was just a receiver coach last couple years.
Right, right.
I've been helping out with the passing game, but this is my first year really calling everything.
So I know Adam asked you a little earlier about the philosophies that you'll take from some of the coaches that you'll draw from your experience in the game. But also, like, could you tell us a little bit how you prepare for that? Like, how do you prepare – given that you already have the institutional football knowledge that you come with,
right?
But how do you prepare to become a first-year offensive coordinator? Like, what is that process even like to start calling plays for the first time?
To be honest, I'm going through that process now. So I'm talking,
figuring it out right now.
As we go through it, like, I'm looking at old playbooks from my years in the NFL, from the Texans, from the Buccaneers, from Jacksonville, just looking at different stuff that I like, trying to emulate and put that into high school language, or put that into ways that I think will be good for the particular guys that we have on our team. What can they relate to? What can they understand? What can they do? Can't do everything, right? And then thinking about my college, in my college, it was Division III school, but my head coach was 323 wins and like 23 losses in 23 years. So he went to the College Football Hall of Fame. But what he always told me was, he was like, I call plays based on what my players did well. It was that simple. Like, he's like, it's not hard. What you guys did well, I called those plays. So in my eyes, it's like, okay, figure out what my guys do well. What did we do well in the past? I don't want to change. I end up getting the job late because our head coach, previous head coach, Terry Purtle, who did an awesome job there, took us to state championship last year, Final Four the last 3-4 years. He's moving on to be an athletic director at Houston Christian. Nothing but love for him and good luck to him. But what he's done, his system's already kind of implemented in, right? So you don't want to come in this late in the game, change everything, and just switch everything all up. So at the same time, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what works for us? What can we improve on? Looking at old playbooks, talking to different coaches, figuring out, and using Tony Levine, but figuring out different ways,
right?
How to attack and what's best for this high school football team.
Well, look, Cecil, I wish you the best of luck in this, man. Obviously, I'm rooting for you, on a professional, personal level, just anything that you do, I'm rooting for you in. So I'm happy for you in this opportunity. But before we get out of here in this first segment, Cecil, I want to lay out in these next few minutes four topics that I think are really important this week, or what stands out to me, this being Monday. I know it's 4th of July, but as we start this week and kind of look ahead, I mentioned in the toss with Adam Spillane and Sean Bajani that For me, this is not really the dog days of sports. Like people talk about it being in July and August and in the summer, that period of time, you know, Cecil, when, you know, the NBA is done, you don't quite have football left. And all that's really going on is baseball and then whatever some of the individual sports you might like, whether it be golf or if you're into golf tennis. Or if you're into tennis, all of that stuff is going on right now as well. But as far as like the three major sports, or any, and even if you like hockey, I mean, you're at the end of that as well. So like you're kind of in that dog days. But for the Astros, you know, for a Houston sports fan, if you like the Astros or if you're a fan of any of the baseball teams that are good, then this is a pretty good time of the year. Like you're pretty much, you know, you're at a point where the sample size is big enough to where you know what your baseball team is, or at least you feel like you know what your baseball team. Trade deadline is right around the corner. You feel like you're trying to understand what your needs are, but there's still a lot of baseball to be played. So you're kind of stuck in the monotony, you know, of the season. So that's part of it as well. But tonight, I think specifically, being in a market with one of those baseball teams, one of, I think, that's really only, we're talking about three or four baseball teams that look like they're set apart from anybody else. You're talking about the Astros and the New York Yankees, who the Astros just dominated within the last, you know, 10 days or so. And on, you know, in the National League side, I would really only count the Dodgers as being on the same level as the Astros and the Yankees. I wouldn't even put the Mets in there. So really talking about,
you don't believe in the Mets yet?
Not on that same. I think they're good. I
but
think
not
they're
on
good.
The level, not on that tier.
Not quite. Like Scherzer just got back. Max Scherzer just got back. Jacob DeGrom, I think, is going to pitch finally at some point. And those are their best guys, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they've been hurt. But to me, they're just good, not great. Okay. Now they, if Scherzer's right and DeGrom is right, especially down the stretch, I think we're having a totally different conversation about the Mets, and they could be great. Like if those guys are right, last year, when Scherzer was with the Dodgers, his arm basically exploded or went dead on him, and he was of no use toward the end of the season. Will the fact that he's been out or injured, I mean, how is that going to factor into the calculus of how good he is down the stretch? And then DeGrom is a question mark as well as somebody who has not pitched all year. So I just can't put it, considering how the Astros played against the Mets, and then when I look at the Astros, the Yankees, and what the Dodgers bring, even though the Dodgers got some guys that are key that have been struggling as well, I just can't really put them on that level right now.
Okay,
I just can't do it right now. But right now, though, Jake Odorizzi is pitching tonight for the first time in a long time since he got hurt. And it looked like, you know, he was carted off the field, looked like he was going to be out for the rest of the season, like he had blown his Achilles. He's on the mound tonight for the Astros against the Kansas City Royals. And I think one of the key questions that we'll bandy about throughout the day or at some point is whether every Odorizzi start between now and the trade deadline, which is just a little bit under a month away, if every one of those starts is basically a showcase, an MLB showcase of sorts for one of your excess pitchers who you perhaps would like to trade. And is it even a good thing to view it that way, to just trade a guy for the sake of excess, for the sake of trading? Like, how do you feel about that? Because I know when you and I talked about this before the show, you're like, hey, man, you can't have too much pitching.
Never.
Is it even a situation where you would even want to deal all of these guys? Do you want to keep them around? Also, the Rockets, while on standby for the results of a Kevin Durant trade, they want to know exactly how bad the Nets are going to be since they hold those picks. While everybody is waiting on that, they did announce their summer league roster, and they opened up summer league play in Las Vegas against the Orlando Magic on Thursday. That's Paolo versus Jabari, in case you didn't know. We'll talk a little bit about the Rockets as well. And the Texans, look, Cecil, you're going to explain to me what a Pep Hamilton offense, what a Pep Hamilton offense is. We are 20 days away from rookies reporting to training camp, 22 days away from veterans reporting, 40 days away from the preseason starting against the New Orleans Saints at NRG Stadium. I imagine that you're going to be in the building, Cecil, right?
Yes, sir.
And we're going to talk a little bit about college football as well, because U of H is less than a year away now from joining the Big 12. But what exactly is the Big 12? We got all of these things to talk about. And Brandon Scott, Cecil Shorts, and for Clint Sterner in the show on an Independence Day version of Clint Sterner in the show on Sports Radio 610. That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show. Do you love outside? Yeah. That's right. Do
you love the South Side? I do love the South Side. Yeah. It's Fat Pat, man. Hey, look, when you're riding with me, man, you're going to get some Houston rap in some of the bumps. I didn't even realize that Chris Santiago, I should have mentioned, is behind the ones and twos, on the ones and twos, and behind on the other side of the glass for us. So shout out to Chris Santiago producing this bad boy today. But yeah, when you roll with me, I didn't realize that Chris saw that list of bumps that I had from the last time that I drove. So you asked me that in the break, when was the last time that I drove a show? Whenever it was, I used these bumps of my own. So these H-Town versions. Oh, so it would have been, I guess, with John Harris. I guess I drove with John Harris a couple of weeks or maybe Jay a couple Harris. Of months ago now.
Jay Harris.
So yeah. Shout out to you, Chris, for finding those bad boys. I ain't even tell you about that, and you knew what to do. My man. I appreciate that. But I got a question, Cecil. I got a real question. Is tonight a showcase? Is tonight with Jake Odorizzi on the mound against the Kansas City Royals for the Astros, a showcase with the trade deadline approaching? And for context, the deadline is on August 2nd, which makes that less than a month away. The Astros have now six starting pitchers that are healthy, at least, that they are putting out there. They're going to a six-man rotation. That's essentially what Jake Odorizzi being on the mound today means. And also, with Christian Javier remaining in the rotation, that's what that means. And so the next logical question is, do you trade one of these guys? And what I'm wrestling with is, I'm comfortable trading for him, depending on what you get, but I'm uncomfortable with the idea of just trading a guy for the sake of it. You know what I mean? Like, because I got too many good players. And what a great problem this is for the Astros to be in. Like, let's just point that out, first of all. How cool is it to be saying that, hey, man, I think I got seven starting pitchers. I don't know what to do with all of them. But I'm uncomfortable with the idea of trading any of these guys just for the sake of trading them. And to be clear here, how I'm framing this. I don't think that that's what the Astros are going to do. I don't think they're just going to trade a guy just because they got too many. Mm-hmm. But there is a valid question about trading one of the surplus arms. Which one of them would it be? The logic would dictate that it's Jake Odorizzi because he's the one with the least amount of team control on his contract other than Justin Verlander. But you're obviously not trading Justin Verlander.
Correct.
So other than Verlander, he's the one with the least amount of team control. I mean, so to me, it's a valid question. But I'd much rather reconfigure roles than be hasty.
There you go.
You know, so I throw that to you. Like, are we watching right now a showcase of Jake Odorizzi as a trade chip, or should that be more or less off the table? Should you not want to? I mean, we're talking about one of the better, just for context also, talking about one of the better rotations in baseball, if not best one. They just came off of, if we want to relive the weekend real quick, they just came off of a record-breaking 20 strikeout performance against the Angels. 20. And I know the Angels ain't really good, okay, but they got Mike. They out there making Mike Trout look like a mere mortal.
He was swinging and missing.
Swinging and missing. Cecil, at one point on Saturday, I look up, and I'm paying attention, and this man has struck out three times. Mm. On 9 pitches. Mm. 3 times on 9 pitches. Like,
you're answering your own question right here.
I mean, and so.
You're answering your own question.
What do you do here when you got excess guys? Is it automatic that just because you got a lot of guys that are good and you're not sure of the role? And I think part of this last, another piece of this question is that last year, when they had excess starters, and they ain't had 7, it was 6 last year because mm-hmm. Verlander was hurt. Mm-hmm. So they had this problem with Christian Javier last year and had to reconfigure his role, put him in a bullpen, and they just didn't really know how to manage it. Or maybe a better way of saying is it that the management of it did not work out. Him in that role did not work out, and they couldn't really figure it out. So given that that's how last year played out, with context, does that impact how you view this year and what you would do with an excess of pitchers right now being 6? And at some point, whenever Lance McCullers Jr. comes back, don't know when that's going to be, but at some point you're going to have 7 guys.
Lance going to come back. Yeah.
What you think about it, Cecil? Do you trade just because of excess, or do you not rock the boat and try to figure out how to make the most of a good thing?
I'm never trading just because. I'm not doing that. I think one thing you mentioned last year, the mismanagement, or they didn't know how to manage when it comes to Christian Javier. I would hope you, as an Astros, we have grown from that. They have figured it out. Like, okay, if we have to do this again, what would we do different, right? That's something you sit down after the year, after you lose in the playoffs, like, okay, hey, we didn't do this well. How can next year, if this happens, how can we improve, right? But for me, knowing, and then you're the baseball mind between the two of us. You know baseball, right?
Sure.
To win a game, you need pitching.
Yeah.
And in my eyes,
especially in the postseason,
you can never have enough arms. And being in the postseason is still a good amount of time away.
Right.
You don't know what injury is going to pop up. Yep. You don't know who's going to be around, who gets in the slump, whatever the case may be. I need as many arms as I can on this roster. And you just mentioned it. They're rolling right now. They're rolling.
Yeah.
McCullers may come back and may not be the same.
Yeah.
He may be a guy that you inch in, okay, maybe you may be in a role where it's lesser, or whatever the case may be, just for the time being, right? Just to protect his arm, whatever the case may be. I don't know. But I'm not giving up anybody unless I have a glaring need. If there's a glaring need that I need a certain guy, I need this position to be filled, like it's terrible right now, then okay, I'll think about trading. But right now, I'm sitting.
And that's another interesting thing about the Astros for me, Cecil, in trying to figure out what those needs are. Because at what point, I know I was on this very show back when Clinton Run were doing the Bullets and Bugs tour. We were out at a remote location, and we were talking about, like, what does the team need? And at the time, you got to remember at the time, Martin Maldonado, who was still not a great hitter, but has had an amazing weekend between what he's done with the pitching staff, having a multi-home run game, had a two-home run game. That was the other thing about that day, Cecil. Not only did Mike Trout strike out three times on nine pitches, but in the same game, Martin Maldonado hit two home runs. And so, suffice it to say, the world was like on his ass for the day. That's how it, that's at least how it felt to me. But there was a point in this season where there was a question about what do you do at catcher because you're not getting a lot of production at catcher. There was a point where there was a question of do you go get another outfielder, primarily a center fielder, because Chaz McCormick and Jose Siri don't necessarily get it done, and Jake Myers is coming off of an injury. But they seem to have figured that out. Like, all of the questions about catcher are dead now. After the way the Astros pitchers performed against the Yankees, against the Mets, and then most recently now against the Angels, okay? Like, Martin Maldonado's value, I think, has been crystallized and put in a full perspective. I know the guys before us were talking about this as well at length, but that has been put into full perspective on top of the fact that they feel really good about Jake Myers in center field. You don't want, and then also at catcher, even with Jason Castro getting hurt, they bring up Corey Lee, one of their better prospects, somebody that a lot of people are excited about. And so now you're like, okay, where's that need at? Is it first base with Yuli Gurriel? No, they're probably not going to lose faith in Yuli Gurriel. So where exactly is that need? And the one thing, going back to the point that you made, and I think we've both made at this point, you always need pitching.
Always.
Especially if you expect to be in the mix in the postseason. That's Cecil Shorts III. I am Brandon Scott. We are in on the Independence Day version of Clint Sterner in the show. And look, we are 20 days away from the Texans rookies reporting to training camp. We're 40 days from the preseason opener against the Saints. So which rookies do y'all expect the most from? Who are y'all most excited about? B. Scott and Cecil Shorts going to talk about that on Sports Radio 610 next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
No Clint Sterner, no show today, but we got a show for you. It's B. Scott, SportsRadio610.com, in the building with Cecil Shorts. He's a former Texans wide receiver, played a while in the NFL. You might have heard of him before. And I got to ask, man, and Cecil, it's been a while since we had the pleasure of having you in here with us and being able to talk to you about this draft, about this Texans schedule, about all of the things that are going on. It's really actually an exciting time for the team. And you know, and we'll get to some of this too. Chris, you can get ready for some of that Mills audio we might play on the back end of this segment. But I wanted to start off asking not just you, Cecil, but our audience, 713-572-4610. Holla at us on this 4th of July. But which Texans rookie do you expect the most from this season, or are you most excited?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
To watch. Like, I think that there are several that are exciting to watch or to be excited about, right? And to have some expectations of, quite honestly, because this is not a super talented football team.
Right, right.
And a lot of the talent infusion is these young guys. Let's just be frank about it.
No, that's a fact.
So I think it's a valid question to ask, which one are you most excited about? And it doesn't have to be a right or wrong answer to this question. I think there's an obvious one, having had the number three overall pick. I feel like it's easy to default on that. But I think there are other options and other answers to that question, and part of the reason why is Derek Stingley's coming off of an injury. Okay, that's your top pick.
Yeah, special.
John Metchie, who I think is the best offensive weapon that they drafted, slot receiver out of Alabama, also coming off of an injury. Foot injury for Liz Frank, surgery for Derek Stingley, of course. If you guys have been following, y'all know that. Liz Frank injury for Derek Stingley Jr. had surgery last year, and ACL injury for John Metrie suffered earlier this year, okay? Mm-hmm. Both returning from injury. Those, to me, are on each side of the ball the guys I'm most excited about. Don't know what to expect because they're coming off the injury. Mm-hmm. So, and I know the people that I really respect and like have said that they expect Damian Pierce, the running back out of Florida that was drafted, to rush for 1,000 yards. And I feel like that's like post-draft excitement, wanting to pump up the new guys and everything. But the more and more I process that, I'm like, hey, come on, guys. Let's slow down a little bit on that. That seems a little heavy, a little much. Okay, so I kind of want to temper that expectation a little bit, reel that back in a little bit. But I do want to ask if there's a rookie that maybe stands out for you, Cecil, that you're most excited to watch this year.
It's a few of them, if I'm honest. Number one, I think I didn't get a chance to talk about the draft class. I think it's a really good draft class.
Okay.
I truly do.
Why is that?
Well, this is the first year my man Nick Caserio has actually had a first-round pick, right? Because last year, I believe he had 2 threes. Ended up trading to get the second 3 to go get Nico, right?
That's right. Yep.
So to go out and get positions of need, but he's getting players that can play. In my opinion, like just watching them in college, understanding the position of need, where they go. For example, John Metchie, who you mentioned, to me, he would have been a late first round, early second round pick if it wasn't for the injury so late in the year.
There's a case for that.
In the playoffs, sort of, maybe SEC championship or something.
Yeah, I believe
like
that was it, yeah.
He was a guy that failed to them at the third round.
Right.
No way he would have been in the third round if he was healthy. He would have been probably early second, somewhere in that range. When you go get a guy like Christian Harris, a guy that can run, a guy that can cover, a guy that can do all the things a linebacker can do. If I had to pick one guy, it would be Kenyon Green. I think he is just a nasty, nasty, mean offensive lineman. If you just look how he carries himself, if you look how he looks on film, if you just look how he plays the game, that's the type of guy you want in your offensive lineman room. And that's the type of guy you want when you're trying to figure out who is going to be my guards, who's going to be my center, who's going to be on this offensive line for the next 4 or 5 years. This is the guy. This is the guy that's going to get Damian Pierce or Marlon Mack those yards. This is the guy that's going to help change this run game from being whatever it was last year and the year before to being something this year. Because you got the tackles. You got Titus and you got Tunsil, right?
Right.
Those two are going to be your right and your left. And then I think it benefits them to know right now, not Tunsil, but to benefit Titus to know right now what he's going to play, where he's going to be at, and he can just simply work on that, right?
Yeah.
But when you have a guy like Kenyon, who's going to be a guard, and as nasty as he is, he can pull, he can be, he's just, it's exciting for me because he can change the whole landscape of the offense, in my opinion.
I felt like also, though, and that was not what I was expecting, the direction I was expecting you to go with that, but I think that, for me, it seems like that was what this Texans offensive line was lacking. Like, it wasn't just a matter of, and this was part of it, I'm not trying to minimize, but it wasn't just a talent issue, but I do, and I'm talking about the interior here, not Titus and Laramie Tunsil, even though That to me, that was an organizational error in trying to make Titus into a guard when he was already good at tackle. But I digress. It wasn't, to me, just a talent issue. It wasn't just, to me, a coaching issue. We talked to Wade Smith, heard him talk about this, and heard others kind of allude to it, but that assignments and communication was difficult, not always clear among the offensive line. And so that was an issue. But it wasn't just, to me, a matter of talent and communication, but I did feel like they could use just a little bit more edge to him.
Yeah.
A little bit more nastiness to him.
Some dog.
And easy for me to say as a skinny guy who, you know, didn't play the game. You play wide receiver, but you understand what it takes. Like, but to me, not to oversimplify it, it feels like you're oversimplifying when you're saying that boy just need more dog in him. But it did feel like that watching this offensive line play, speaking to your point about what you like most about Kenyon Green, that they just did not have that mix of both talent, coaching, and nastiness up front that's required to have a decent offensive line.
You need your offensive line to get dirty, man. Like, you need your offensive line to get nasty, to be physical, that loves to run the ball, that loves to do their job every single day. You can't have soft offensive linemen. Not saying the guys were soft, But when you have Kenyon, he's going to bring that dog. He's going to bring that tenacity that, hey, if we run power to the right side and Kenyon's pulling, he's going to knock somebody's head off.
Right.
And that's going to get everybody excited. It's going to lift up that room. And you got to think, when you're seeing that in a room every day, the intensity he's bringing, the dog he's bringing, the coach is going to emphasize him, and that's going to elevate everybody else in the room to live up to their potential and be nasty and be dogs as well. So he is the guy, man, in my opinion, I was really excited about the more research I've done on him. Because at first, Kenyon Green, I'm like, okay, you know, guy from A&M, okay, cool. And then that's how I watch film and research. I'm like, oh, this guy's nasty.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I find it interesting that would be your pick is because I made this point after the draft, and I still actually believe it. I'll stand by it, is that, and I hope that Kenyon Green is either not listening or doesn't internalize what I'm about to say, because this is me as a media person building, like, kind of shaping a narrative here. I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by saying that, okay? But in a lot of ways, to me, Kenyon Green has a little bit of added pressure on him given where the Texans were with that second pick. So that's a pick also from the Deshaun Watson trade.
Correct.
But where they were in that draft, who was available at 13? Like, so they were originally available.
13 or 12?
Or it was 13. Yeah, it was 13. And they moved back. Or was it 15? Either way. Move back. Yeah, so it's 13, move back to 15.
Yes.
So who goes at 13 and 14, okay, before they pick at 15? Jordan Davis ends up going to
Philly.
To Philly. And I think everybody thinks that Jordan Davis is going to be a badass in this league. Okay? So that's who Philly takes at 13, where you would have been able to also pick a player. Jeez. And then at 14, who goes at 14, Cecil? Kyle Hamilton.
Kyle to the Baltimore Ravens.
Now, I know you got a nice safety that you like in Jalen Petrie in the second round, but to move back those two spots,
that's true.
You pass on effectively Jordan Davis and Kyle Hamilton, and then after Kenyon Green, I'm blanking on the offensive lineman that gets picked after Kenyon Green, but he was also the guy that a lot of people liked in that draft as well, another guard. So to me, everything around Kenyon Green was interesting, and the decision to move back and select him was also an interesting selection. So that was another reason why I thought that was interesting. But really quick to kind of speak to your point about him and sort of just that dog in him, I'm listening to you talk about that, and I kind of noticed a trend with all of the offensive guys that they picked, or at least the top three, in terms of Kenyon Green, okay, John Metchie, and even Damian Pierce, the running back. Like, if there's one thing you can say about them, and their prospects of varying degrees on how good you're expecting them to be, perhaps, right? But all of them, I feel like, have a little bit of that. And I know it kind of sounds cliche, but kind of got that edge that the team did not feel like it had in previous years. From Kenyon Green, the way you just laid it out earlier. Mm-hmm. But John Metchie is like that too, like guy who's not very big. I feel like you guys are kind of similar size, similar stature. This guy operates like he is willing to deliver a blow just as he's willing to take one as a wide receiver. And to me, he feels like sort of that slot receiver that they've been looking for a few years now, that they've been trying to take swings at and haven't been able to figure out. And of course, Damian Pierce, one thing you can say about him, dude's not fast or anything. But north-south, you know, north-south hitting the hole, that type of guy, that type of power back. Not a big guy, but that type of power back. So I get that sort of sensibility from all three of the guys that they drafted, or at least the top three guys that they drafted offensively.
No doubt about it. The thing about Metchie that I love is his run after catch. Like, after he catches the ball, he trying to get north-south.
Exactly.
Like, he trying to get upfield. Like, he's a guy that's going to be like, all right, I may be 5'11", 185, 187, whatever he is, but I'm going to get this rock and I'm going to tote that thing and I'm trying to get what I can. And he did that in the SEC.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't doing that, and it's no knock because I came from a small school. He wasn't doing this against, you know, whoever. He was doing this against top-tier talent week in, for the most part, week in and week out, right?
Yeah.
So, and again, in my opinion, he would have been higher. I believe he was a second, late second-round pick, I just see you now. So second-round, 44th pick. He would have been a higher pick possibly if it wasn't for the ACL.
Right.
So when you have a guy like that that's hungry, that's in the slot, that's going to in this Pep offense that's going to be used correctly. When you have a guy like Dameon Pierce, and I'm gonna even say Marlon Mack, because I'm not on. I shouldn't say I'm not on the Dameon Pierce train. I think Dameon's gonna be good. I just don't think he'll get 1,000 yards his rookie year.
Yeah, we got to look carried away.
That's a lot.
Mechie was the number 44 overall.
44 overall. Yeah, so that was second round. Correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think Marlon Mack, when it comes to the running game, will be the starter week one.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion.
It feels that way.
If you know what I mean, I just feel like if he's healthy, he'll be the guy, and then Dameon will spell him.
And I can tell you, Cecil, I was out at these mini camps and these OTAs, and I know you don't get a good sense. You probably would actually get a better sense for like what to make of what you see at an OTA and what not to, like how to play it or how much to play it or not. But as far as like just a dude in t-shirt and shorts or like guys that are intentionally not trying to hurt each other, you know what I mean? He had a burst to him. Like he didn't look like he was labored or injured or somehow
he's,
you know, like he was going to take a step back because of his Achilles. Now, we haven't seen this a lot coming back from an Achilles injury. The only real example that we've been able to pull out here at the station has been Deontay Foreman coming back and playing for the Titans and being pretty good after tearing his ACL here. Oh, I'm sorry, tearing ACL, the Achilles here. But we haven't seen it a lot. As far as just like, you know, take it at face value, it's OTAs, they out there in t-shirt and shorts. Marlon Mack out there is out there running. I did see a Battle Red blog. Is it the SB Nation Texan-centric blog did a film study of Dameon Pierce in their game against Georgia last year. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good, that's about as good of a litmus test for a running back or any offensive player that you can get that hasn't played in the NFL for how their game is going to translate to the NFL. Because Georgia's defense was, I think we would agree, was historically good.
Oh, for sure.
So and he had a good game, suffice it to say that. And, you know, ran a little bit reckless at times. Like, I think that's the thing that a lot of people like about him is that he might be a little crazy. You know, runs with that kind of edge and did that against a very talented Georgia defense.
Listen, how the Texas run game was last year. We need some recklessness. Like we need.
What I'm getting at.
We need a
from
guy,
the Cecil from the line to the backs, right?
Like, yes, we need a guy that's like, hey, I'm gonna get this yard. You in my way? Head first. Like we need a guy like it's gonna be a little bit. You know what? A little Marion Barber type. I think he just passed away recently. Yeah, rest in peace. We need a guy that's going to be some a dog in him. And I go back to your point with with Kenyon Green, Dameon Pierce, John Metchie, the three top offensive guys they drafted. You see that in them. They have that dog in them. They have that want to, that drive, that hunger that necessarily wasn't there the previous years. So it's exciting to see. And I'm really thinking, if you look at Dameon Pierce's stats in college, like, oh, he didn't get that many carries. He didn't. That's not a bad thing for a running back. Like, right. That means he's fresh.
No, I
like you want that type of
part of me likes him because of that.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
I like the fact that he doesn't have a lot of miles on him. Dameon Pierce, John Mechie. For Cecil Shorts, Kenyon Green is the rookie to watch. Yeah. So y'all be watching in the trenches. Davis Mills, quarterback for your Houston Texans, had a quarterback camp in Georgia over the weekend, and John Crumpler from Texans Wire was there and asked him about Pep Hamilton, asked him about the season and how things compare. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Cecil, and we're going to get into a little bit later on in the show what a Pep Hamilton offense is and have you break that down for us a little bit. But I want to go to Davis Mills. He's in Georgia. Talking to John Crumpler at Texans Wire about Pep Hamilton as an offensive coordinator and what that relationship is like.
What is it that makes Pep so good at what he does?
I mean, he's just a great coach altogether. He's been in the position and done it at a high level for a long time, been around some great quarterbacks and helped them become great quarterbacks. So, I mean, he played quarterback himself. He still goes out there and slings around at practice to show us what we need to be doing. So,
is he a warm guy? What's the relationship like?
Yeah, I mean, he's a warm guy when he needs to be, and then he'll get on you when he needs to as well to make sure you're continuing to progress. And I mean, he wants the best out of us, and we push him as well to give us his best. So, I mean, I think we're all pretty tight in the QB room, and we're excited to see where we're headed this year.
So that was Davis Mills talking about Pep Hamilton, but he was also asked by Crumpler if it feels different from last year, as opposed to last year going into year two, and how does it feel different going into year two? Here's Davis Mills.
And then how does this year feel different? I think the noise around the fan base right now, this year, it feels different from the outside. Does it feel different on the inside of Lovie Smith, the head coach, and even just as a second-year player?
Definitely. I think we're headed in a really good direction. I feel like, at least at this time last year, we're at a much better spot this year. Everyone, I think, has that optimism and confidence from this offseason. We're excited to get into training camp at the end of this month and continue in that same direction.
See, so we're going to talk about Pep Hamilton's offense later on in the show, but just we got another minute left before the break here. I want to get your thoughts on Davis Mills going into year two, and just your overall thoughts on Davis Mills and Pep Hamilton as a pairing for this Texans offense.
I'm a fan of Davis Mills. I think the draft helped him. I think what we saw the last four or five, maybe six games of the year is what we'll see earlier on from Davis this year. I don't know if he will be the guy. I don't know that. But I think this is the year we will have a full 17, 18-game schedule, whatever it is nowadays. But we'll know. I'm a big fan of Davis. I think he'll do well. I think Pep will help him just because they have familiarity and a lot of language and been around a lot of the same people, so they can understand each other well. But I think it'll be good.
Yeah, so to me, it's just like figuring out how good or like how good. To me, it's the open question is how good of a quarterback is Davis Mills?
Correct.
How good of an offensive coordinator is Pep Hamilton? I think as a fan, it's easy to be optimistic about it, and I want everybody to be optimistic about it, but to me, it really is the most important and open question for the Texans going into this season. Look, Jake Odorizzi is back on the mound for the Astros tonight. Is it a showcase for Major League Baseball's trade deadline less than a month away? That and more on the Big 3 at 3. Brandon Scott and Cecil Shorts on Sports Radio 610.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.